You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
If at first you don't succeed, try again. Or so they say. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second recording of this week's The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with me, Alex Payne. It's a great pleasure to be having yet another run-up to our show this week. It's a warm welcome back to the same show, to Ellis Genge. How are you?
Very well. In the middle of cooking a Thai red curry.
I'm very sorry to pull you away from the Thai red curry. It's a very warm welcome back to the show, to Jack Willis. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. How are you getting on?
Yeah, long time no speak. Long time no speak. All of 18 hours. We had a very, very nice chat yesterday evening, about 2 hours of chewing the fat and getting through life and the ups and downs of being a professional sportsman. And we spent quite a lot of time, Jack, talking about the fact that you were in Shadowlands and the disappointment of obviously not being picked for your country and how you were now training with your club and all that malarkey. And I don't even think the ink is dry on the page. I don't even think the download of the pod to the editors is complete. And you're now in the England squad. So let's start with congratulations. Take two.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
What on the boy?
Bit of a whirlwind day, to be fair. It's not, well, you don't really expect it heading into training, especially as camp's not even officially started yet. And there's not really much going on. I didn't really expect it at all. But yeah, just I was just in a club doing some weights. I missed the call from the team manager and then I went back to my phone after because we were about to head out for rugby. So I got all changed, was heading out. And then I just checked my phone quick and saw all that. And I was like, fuck it. Oh, I don't know if I want to swear on it.
You're allowed to go wherever you want to go.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was like, fucking hell, I can't believe, like, what's going on? So I ran around to our team manager and said, look, what's the crack? And he's like, right, mate, get yourself home and get your stuff together. Be ready for packed, ready to head down tomorrow. So... yeah, a bit mental. I didn't expect it at all, but fantastic and chuffed, mate.
Good on you. Ellis?
The boy, he's back. We said last night, didn't you? Alex said, it, obviously, not detriment to any other player, but we don't want anyone to get injured or anything. But he said, hopefully, you get the opportunity, and bang, there it is. The pod works in mysterious ways, my boy.
You're a lucky charm, mate. That's what it was.
In all seriousness, thank you for coming back and for going back to the washing up basket and putting on the clothes from yesterday as well to make it look relatively like this is one show. I think we're probably going to give up on that. What is absolutely fascinating is that this is actually, in real time, the transient nature of being a professional rugby player. Yesterday, it was not depression, but it was disappointment and all the things that go alongside it. And today, is it euphoria? I mean, where the hell do the emotions take
you? Yeah, where's your head at?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I think... when you hear bad news, you tell yourself, and you come up with every coping mechanism and you're like, oh, it's all right. I can focus on my games at WASC, get some game time in, just focus on training here, work on my extras, this, that, the other. You tell yourself all the right thing. Also, I got my Traegers arrived today. So I was like, I'm going to crack on using the Traeger.
Good plan.
And then, yeah. Send me some free pellets, please. If that's all right. when I first saw it all, you're like, obviously I'm chuffed that I can't wait to get in and get down there, but it's shock and you're just a bit like, hang on a minute, that's not what I thought was going to happen. And you prepared yourself for the complete opposite. And then, and I feel like it's weirder the fact that camp's not even started yet. Whereas if I was called in halfway through, you're kind of like, oh, well, training knocks or whatever happens.
Yeah.
There's been no games. There's not been anything. It's a bit just random, but no, buzzing, absolutely buzzing.
We should say bad luck to poor old Sam Underhill. And, you know, I know you wouldn't want to be taking your place in these circumstances, and hopefully, you know, he's all right. But the challenge now for you is to make the most of it. I mean, is that something that you talk to yourself about? Is that something you doodle in notebooks as to how you make the opportunity maximised as much as you can? I mean, how do you reset goals like that?
Yeah, firstly, gutted for Unders. Like, he was great for me when I was in camp and we got along really well. Well, I thought we did. He might not say the same, but it's always shit if you get a knock, and hopefully he's not out for too long. But as you say, I sort of got to realign my goals and what I want to do moving forward. I think in terms of what I'm focusing on improving, nothing changes, but it's obviously a different shift in mindset. I think I gave my best mate from home a call earlier, and he was buzzing. He just said to me, look, like, you've got to go in there with a bit of an extra edge. Like, you've got, I've now got a point to prove, but in a way I kind of do that. I wasn't originally in that squad, and I want to prove that I feel like I should have been and really force my way into it. So my mindset's not to go in there and be the guy that's just been added to the squad. It's how much I can try and bring to the training, to the games, anything I'm involved in, hopefully as much as possible. But even if it's a little as possible, then I'll hopefully put my best foot forward.
Tell you what, we should just remind everyone, we're actually recording this on the week before it will go out, on the 3rd of Feb. We're recording this the week before, because obviously once you're in England camp, you know, you've got media duties and media blackouts, etc. The one thing you are now not allowed to do is get injured in the next 7 days. Otherwise, we're going to be having a third run up at this podcast. But Ellis, I'd love to know from you how, you know, you've been in and out a bit, you've had call-ups, you know, etc., sent back. I mean, how do you handle the emotional roller coaster of being, you know, a top flight pro rugby player? For those of us that like security and the day to day, just to be relatively calm, I don't know how the hell you put yourselves through it.
Yeah, it was a bit more hectic, I'd say, a few years back, just with being at Penny Hill. It was the amount of times I drove up and down to Penny Hill in a week. I reckon the most was four once, because Marla's back stiffened up. So I got sent home on the Tuesday, Marla's back stiffened up, then he was all right, I went home again, and then his back was fucked, so I had to come back again. Like, it's just the way it is. It's the nature of the beast, isn't it? You got to be prepared to drop everything at a heartbeat. The thing that I was going to say to you, Jack, is I bet you've unknowingly, and rightly so, like, planned your whole week out, what you're going to be doing, and so, obviously we're on lockdown and stuff, but you would have had your, I don't know, your rock cap. Rockport business to deal with. You'd have had, like, you might have arranged a business call and stuff, and now you just got to drop it all on his ass and 100% focus on the rugby, because that's what you want to do.
Well, exactly that, really. I've spent the last sort of, well, once I got in from training this morning, dropped a few emails to people, had Zoom calls lined up and all sorts on tomorrow, which is my day off, and then Friday, which is another day off for the club. I had it all lined up and, yeah, dropping a few messages saying, look, lad, sorry, but I'm off. Leave it with Alex. London's is good. He's, as we were saying yesterday, that's what makes it nice about doing it yourself, running your own business with someone that understands the rugby. Yeah. It makes it so ideal. The first thing he says is he's buzzing for me, not, oh, mate, what we're going to do. Exactly, yeah. So, no, he's a good lad.
This show is wonderfully Ask About Tit. And dear viewer, if you've got no idea what it is that we're talking about, all will be revealed as we get into the meat of the conversation from yesterday. The other question I want to ask you, Jack, is how your missus, how Megan takes it. Does she go, yay, I won't see you for 8 weeks? Is she genuinely chuffed? Is it sort of faux excitement for you? I mean, it must be bloody hard for those left behind.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when I... She wouldn't admit it to me, but I could tell when I came down the other night after my call with Eddie saying I'm not in the squad, that she was holding back a smile that I'm going to be sat here for the next few weeks. Obviously, she wants nothing more for me to go and play for my country, but equally at the moment, it's not like she's able to see that. It's still watching me on a TV, but just it would be in a different coloured shirt. It's no different at the moment, whereas I think she'd feel slightly differently if the games I did play a few months ago, she was there at the games, it would be slightly different. But yeah, I think she's trying to put on a brave face today and make sure we have a nice last day together. And then I'm sure she'll be miserable on FaceTime in a few days' time when I'm chatting to her. But she'll be always cheering me on. She's a good girl.
So what is it now, pants and socks in a bag and toothbrush, toothpaste? How quickly can you get ready? I mean, you must be quite a well-trodden path and quite a good routine for getting yourself sorted.
Yeah, it's actually... On my first, when did we arrive now? It would have been, well, I don't know when it was. In the beginning of the Autumn Nations Cup, my first week in camp, I packed half the house. Like, I've rocked up with all wash training gear, unbranded training gear. I've got like 20 different casual outfits as if we were going out every night. I don't know what I thought I was doing. But then I realised when we had a little break and came back that I didn't need anything really apart from my kit. And I left all my kit with the kit man because they store it away because it's such a big bag that you get given. So pretty much this time, just toothpaste and probably pack a few PG tips because the hotel tea is not the same, is it?
So, no.
Is it, what is it, Earl Grey, something like
that? I accidentally had a pot of Earl Grey when I was there and I was fuming. Right. It's probably your favourite, is it, Alex?
That's like hand and glove, that, Ellis, isn't it? Yeah. You know? It reminds me of the story of Mark Regan after they won the World Cup and they went to Buckingham Palace and they all had the lineup with the Queen. And the butler walks past with a pot and goes, "Earl Grey," and he goes, "No, mate, Mark Regan, Bristol and Bath in England." as legend has it. Amazing.
Oh, fucking that, brilliant.
But I'll take it. Someone else's story, which I've borrowed. So, Ellis, you've got Ty on the go. You know, there's a lot more to come, obviously, on this show, which, you know, we're never going to talk breakdown angles and how other squads are coming together. But we had a really good chat last night, and I'm looking forward to everyone getting into that. But what are you doing today? Tidying up, getting everything ready?
Yeah, I'm basically going to, when I come off this call, pack all my gaming setup up. I've got one being sent, actually, to the Lensbury because mine broke down, so I'm on the laptop at the moment. But I'm going to... get the gaming set up, ship down. and then, just pants and socks, same as Jack, because I leave all my stuff with the kit man as well. He does a good job, to be fair. He lugs it all around. But then just like game ready stuff that I've got to take now is like game ready sauna blanket, recovery pumps, all that sort of stuff, because we're not allowed to share the recovery equipment now because of the COVID stuff. So yeah, we'll have to lug around all the game ready and Normatex. What a tough life.
I love the fact that the last supper is a red Thai curry as well.
It was even my ass would have been on fire. So
lovely. And on that note, dear reader, listen, we must let you go. Jack, you got your chance. Take it with both hands. Do you feel super pumped? Ready to rip into it?
I'm looking forward to it, yeah. Be good to see Genji in person as well. So I'm sure he was going to miss me.
There'll be a big hug between the both of you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Social distance,
sort of high five, whatever it is. Thank you, chaps, for coming back and salvaging what was a really good, fun chat. We wish you both the very best of luck with the upcoming Six Nations. It's incredible how quickly these things turn around. But let the fun and games begin for both of you. For everybody else, here is the best of the rest of the conversation that we had last night. We've removed most of the stuff around Jack's disappointment. We've refilled it with the positivity of a man who is on his way to England camp. Enjoy the rest of the show. No Haskell, no tins, which is part of the reason I'm so excited. We've tempted Ellis to the dark side. No longer just a guest, this week a host. How are you feeling?
I popped my cherry, yeah. I was quite excited. More excited than when I lost my virginity, at least.
Good. Well, I'm glad that these things come and they deliver great excitement. Hickory Brothers Scaffolding, is there a little plug for that? Or is that just a freebie?
No, it's just my mate's firm and he gave me a few hats. So cold in this house, man. Can't get the eating on this time yet. It's too expensive.
For all your scaffolding needs, go to hickorybros.com. And we gave you carte blanche this week. We said to you, who would you like to have on as your first guest on A Good, The Bad and The Rugby? And you have gone for... Do you want to reveal your blind date this week?
Don't tell him that. His ego will grow. I've gone for the big lad, Jack Willis, self-proclaimed biggest piece in camp.
Is that right? Self-declaration.
That's not self-proclaimed, no, not at all. That's obviously what Genji's seen. I'll leave that to him. I didn't realise that I was actually selected by Genji as well. So I'll take
hand-picked, boy. Hand-picked.
Oh, mate, I'll take that. Thank you very much for having me on.
Talk to us, Ellis, just a little bit about where you're at, what you're up to, what's been happening in the background, how you keeping?
What's been going on? Obviously not a lot outside of rugby in general with the lockdown stuff. I've been snowed in for the first time in my life. I've always been a city slicker, so the grit is out very early in the morning where I'm from usually. But I'm in the sticks at the moment. So
have you built a snowman?
Oh fuck! No, I'm not going outside. It's freezing. I actually, my dog been escaping. There is a story for you. My dog's been escaping, so I had to pay a bloke to do some fencing around my garden. Because I swear to you, every time I let this dog out, he'd escape. And he's a big dog. Like, I don't want him scaring people. Anyway. I ran outside yesterday or last night. I was playing League of Legends. Ran outside because I heard the dog barking and I thought, fuck me, he's escaped again. Proper freezing cold light. No shoes on because I was in the annex. Like, no shoes on. Ran out looking for a dog. Cass, where is he? And I've stepped in the biggest piece of shit like barefoot as well. And
between the toes?
Yeah, 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 everything, you know, like proper livid. And the shower in my annex is being done, so he's barking now, actually. The shower in my annex is being done, so I like couldn't wash my foot off without waking the babby up. So I've gone back into the ice, turned the shower on, Mrs. Fuming.
Right. And there also, the anecdote, is it tells you about life in the senior squad where you have an annex. Jack, are you packing an annex at the moment?
his annex is probably the size of my house, so cash ease on. But I've actually got a similar story from a few months back. When the COVID thing sort of first kicked off, our kit man got COVID and was out for 10 days. So we had to obviously isolate and we had to wash our own kit. And I've like woken up.
Poor
yeah. Yeah, normally we're very fortunate. So I've woken up really early in the morning, like, shit, I haven't washed my kit. I didn't have any for the next day. So I've gone downstairs, chucked my kit in the washing machine. I've not turned any lights on. So, you know, when you want to like save some sleep, if you know what I mean? So stay dark and like just do it whilst you're still half asleep. I've stepped back when it's pitch black and literally stood in the biggest dog shit. And I was like, you know, when you're like, you're not, like, you can't even get angry. I didn't know what to do, though. I couldn't move. I was like, one on my feet. I didn't want to walk the shit around the house. So I was like, I shouted my missus at like 4:30 in the morning. I was like,
hop it up the stairs.
I was like, good for the calves.
I was like, Megan. She's like, what? And I was like, I can't move. I'm sitting down.
I've been hit.
She's like, what do you want me to do? I was like, fucking come and help me then. Like, I can't fucking move. Just things like that sometimes, just when you're not in the mood for it, they catch
you. You would have been all right though, surely, because you're mental flexible, so why don't you just lift your leg up and put into the sink?
Yeah, but my legs can't extend and like go over to the sink.
A few hops, give it
the old do that again. For those listening, that's incredible. That's unbelievable.
We had a team first session, which is basically where we all sort of sit around and talk about what we think we can do better as a team, and it's sort of like a psychology session, but we police it ourselves. So it's just the boys in the room. And I think at the time, actually, I was taking the pictures like for the new boys in the squad, and obviously Jack being one of the newer lads in the squad, everyone was putting their pictures up on this big board. And I was sat there happy with myself, you know, I'm not very organised myself, so I've organised this fucking, the big debut for everyone to put their photos up of their family, friends and that, and I'm sat there, and at the corner of my eye, and he knows what's coming, I see Willis pull his foot up to his face, whilst he was talking to one of the boys, just pulled his foot up to his face, he was like just chatting, like, oh yeah, I think my picture's gone up, literally foot by face, like that, and I was like, Jack, I just said, Jack, what the fuck is going on? And what's the story behind why you're so flexible, boy?
To be honest, like, I don't really know. The way I think it started off was I played football when I was younger, like started at sort of 5 or 6, quite young. And one of the coaches was like really big on making us stretch and stuff. So he's like, lads, we've got to warm up properly, do our stretches. And I think when I was young, I was quite flexible. So all the lads around me were like, like it was almost like impressive. When you're a kid, someone's like, look how good you are at stretching. I was like, oh, okay, I'm good at this. So I kept doing it. So I kept practicing it. I think I always wanted to be the most flexible when I was that young, playing in the football training or whatever. And then I kind of just slowly realised that it actually was quite helpful rugby-wise and just thought, you know what, got to keep working on it. So I do stretch a lot. Like you say, like I'll randomly have my leg up by my head. I'll do that just sat on the sofa, like stretching, trying to loosen your face.
Not just you. Yeah,
Mrs. loves it, mate. Yeah.
She does. I can only imagine days training what it's like to bend your groin into 180 degrees. What a treat. Two things off the back of that, Ellis. Talk me through the photo board. That's quite sweet. Does everyone bring photos in?
Oh, no. We've had loads of stuff. And like this. They do it when we were away for like a long period of time. So I think for the World Cup one, we did like we had our dogs and stuff on the wall, which was quite cute. It might have been the World Cup, might have been the Six Nations, can't remember. But they always do little things. And this one was like, we had to do it. So I went down, I broadcasted a message on WhatsApp, which I didn't even know you could do. Broadcasted a message on WhatsApp to all the boys so I can have 5 photos of... it can be of family members. It can be of family members. It can be of partners. It can be of whatever you want. And I had to go first. And I didn't want the new boys in the squad thinking they couldn't have a bit of crack. So I put one up, bollock naked, just to set the tone. And then the lads sort of followed too. Otherwise, I feel like everyone would have been a bit stiff, you know?
Bollock naked?
Yeah. Especially
what kind of photos are we talking about here?
So, yeah, basically, it was nice, though, because you find out, like, You found out some interesting stuff about the boys. A few boys played instruments I didn't know they played.
We need a little revelation on that.
What, Sam, Sam, what does Sam do? He plays the
flute,
guitar. Or
surely.
You play
it has to be the
guitar, I think. What was the story? I mean, I wasn't there, Genji, but I just found it hilarious that I think, was it at the World Cup or something, that Anders was playing guitar in his room.
Mate, it was like, when we first arrived, we had like random roomies. Usually, obviously, when you're with each other for a long campaign, they just let you pick your roomie because otherwise you might end up killing someone. And Dales was with Underhill. And Sam's like been listed as one of the worst roomies. I remember once he was roomed with Johnny May and he like took his toothpaste. And it's not a big deal at all. Jack used my toothpaste, couldn't give a fuck. But for some reason, Johnny got real angry about it and was like, I want you to replace this toothpaste. And Sam never replaced the toothpaste. And then someone added a bit of spice, a bit of Salt Bae on top of it. And it sort of progressed into Sam then used his toothbrush. And like, all that sort of shit. So Elliot was hating the fact that he was roomed with them anyway. And I'm pretty sure it might have been Treviso. Sam basically used his guitar. We sat there in the corner playing Shotgun by George Ezra, is it?
Great tune.
Well, it's not a bad song. Once you've heard Anders sing it about 50 times, monotone in the corner, like, dun, dun, and like everyone was just fucking hating it. Elliot filmed it, so now every time we have like a social, we get Anders up to sing that song, basically. Fuming.
And does he take that well, Sam?
He never used to. I think he does now. He's obviously the kiddie, isn't he? He's got
to take it.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing I wanted to pick up on is, in your meeting of self-betterment, what did you both contribute to the group?
Which one's this?
Ellis, you said you were all in a meeting, policed by the players, where you were talking about the things
So
the actors, like, obviously you all need to be more flexible, but yours is...
It's different every time, so sometimes it'd be like, what are you going to sacrifice? Literally changes week to week. So I think this week was just a case of, like, let's get to know the new boys. But sometimes they can be, how you feeling, boys? Like, what do you want to take into this week? New boys are making their debut. What do you think about the game? Yeah, literally ranges from anything. Like, just whatever you're feeling, literally, what says on the tin.
Love it. Jack?
Yeah, I think for me, I was more just trying to take it all in, really. It was my first time in camp, so I wasn't going to be sort of coming out with any big, bold statements, just sort of hearing from the group and taking it all in, really.
You didn't just wrap your foot around the back of your head and say, I think we can all work on our flexibility. Or
Meditation.
levitation. Do you know, funny enough, I was thinking earlier today, it's almost 12 months since you announced yourself to the world with a try in the Calcutta Cup, a post-match beer, and labelling everyone in the media sausages. I mean, obviously you've been doing a few bits and bobs before that, but, you know, that was the moment the world took up and took notice. I mean, how do you guys find out now? Is it just WhatsApp? Is it email?
I think Haas told me this, actually. I think no news is good news. Like, if you don't get a phone call, if you don't speak to someone, usually stay low, move fast, that sort of thing. But no one rang me up and said, look, you're going to be in the squad or anything like that. You sort of have ongoing conversations with people. For example, it might be with the S&C and you might say, right, we're going to go after this in camp. And right up until the day when you know, like, the squad's going to be announced the next day. And I'd say if they were saying all that stuff to you and then you weren't in the squad, you'd be a bit fucking baffled, wouldn't you? As to why they were talking about stuff you're going to be doing the following week. But no, in the past, yeah, like, I found out, like, I wouldn't know very up until the very last second. Literally, my mum and dad have, like, known before me sometimes. And that might just be me, because I tend to try to keep away from it all. What I did back in the day, sort of 2017, 2018, that was the be-all and end-all of my life. That's all you care about is selection when you're a bit younger. But now, obviously, I've got the babby, I've got a dog, I've got other shit. I'm stepping in shit in the morning. So you've got other stuff going on, which I feel sort of, don't shield you, but it definitely takes you out of that, not media spotlight as such, just all the notifications and stuff and texts and people talking about the rugby 24/7. Whereas now you sort of, right, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then you've probably had the conversation anyway.
So I'm quite interested in that. In the early days, I can imagine the heart starts pumping and the hairs on the neck stand up and I'm off to play for my country. Nowadays, it's like, right, I've got a job to do. Let's get to it, kind of thing.
Well, I do feel as though, and I don't know how the other boys feel, Jack, you would have felt as well, is with COVID especially, like, now it's almost that is the regime. Like, right, I'm off to work. My missus is like, oh, you're going away for 8 weeks. And I just spoke to her about it the other day, and she was like, oh, surely you enjoy it, though. Surely you enjoy it. I'm like, yeah, fucking hell. I made the best of that situation. But don't forget, like, we're in a bubble. We can't leave. We actually, it's not the norm. Like, I'm not there having a piss up every day and jolly with the boys. And they do so well in camp to make it comfortable for the lads and sort of try and not make you homesick and all that sort of stuff. And we do little activities. But now the COVID restrictions, I think, have been cracked down on again. So who knows what's going to be happening in camp. But we've got to adapt. Classic. We've got to adapt and move on.
Every game as it comes.
Just be ready for whatever comes us.
Yeah, love it. Another game next week. Can I ask you, I don't know what your relationship's like with Joe Marler, but it's, you know, we've obviously spoken to him in previous carnations on this pod and have sort of kept up with him as a result. Do you flick him a message and say, big hug, mon brother, hope you're all right?
No, I think he's a bit of a actually. Right.
Strong start. Yeah,
good. I spoke to him earlier before it all got announced. He messaged me and said, Babs, I'm not coming into camp. Can't remember if I asked why. I said, look, boy, do what you got to do. I hope you're well. And I sent him a selfie of me looking pretty minging at the time. And he sent one.
Will I make it again? You wear clothes in any of your selfies?
Not,
or is
not
this
often, actually below this t-shirt. You don't know what's going on.
Whatever makes you comfortable.
It must be tough for you. Like, now you've got the little one going into camp. You must find that much tougher.
And that's what I mean.
And
I think, like, Marla's got 1, 2, 3. I think he's got 3 kids, Felix, and one more on the. I think he's got one more on the way. I'm not 100% sure, but he's got a load of babbies. And I think, like, it's hard for me having one young kid, and he's got like 3. Felix, I'm sure he's got 4. I'm not 100%, but he's got so many young babbies, and he's like real close with his family. Do you know what I mean? He lives at like quite a secluded place where it's always just him and his family. He's a relatively weird bloke anyway. He'd be open with you about that. So he likes to be around his own family more so than he would other people. Ironically, has a podcast where he speaks to other people about the feelings and that. But and it must be so tough for him. And then, like you've seen in 2016, he took the time out, which basically gave me my opportunity. I probably wouldn't be here now if he didn't, to come on the scene. He took time out then because he was struggling with it. And you think that ongoing battle that he must have had for the last 4 years to then leave for camp every single time you got like your missus in your ear saying, oh, I need fucking help with this, I need help with that. But I've just had to get a dog walker because now I'm going away. Obviously, someone else has to walk the dogs. My missus won't be able to do it with the baby. And I suspect Marla's just struggling with stuff like that. I can't obviously speak for him, but yeah, for me, definitely that's the pressures that I feel is like me going away. Who's going to look after the house, basically? And I think he's made a decision based on what he feels to be best for his family. And you got to support the boy all the way, aren't you?
I was going to say just that. In 2021, you end up respecting him more for the difficult decisions that they make. It's not the 50s and the 60s that they move.
Exactly.
You stick your jaw and get on with it. Is it quite easy for you, Jad? I presume you're training with the club in Shadowlands, are you? Or is it? Have you got to box up and move out?
No, just cracking on with the club. I think I kind of look back over the last 3 months and I've actually not played much rugby now because you sort of... Oh, since the final then had like went into camp and obviously for me I was in and around the fringes of the squad trying to be involved as possible during the Autumn Nations, so you don't end up playing sort of week in week out, just trying to fight for a spot. And then I went back and played one game for WAS, then we came back and played one more game, then we had our sort of 2 week compulsory break, came back and since then only played sort of a game and a half really. And over the last few months, I've actually not played much rugby. So you just want to be playing as much rugby as you can, really. I think that's the hard thing, isn't it? Sometimes, Genji, you probably not so much now. You're pretty much involved in every match day squad. But like for the England stuff, if you get caught in between, then it probably you don't play as much rugby in that middle ground, do you?
Yeah, I remember when I first sort of got into the mix, got my cap in 2016. And then I don't think I played again till end of 2017 for the Argentina tour. But I had Cockers as my DOR, so every time I'd go away to camp, get absolutely pounded on the Monday, Tuesday in camp, and then everyone would have a day off on Wednesday, but I'd be training at the club on the Wednesday, train on the Thursday, team run, then play on the Saturday, and just repeat, mate, for a year, literally a year straight. Then eventually my body
and that was because he
busted
wanted,
into flames.
But is that because he wanted you drinking from the pints of the old school, or was that just how Leicester did it? I mean, was that you individually, or was that just the system?
I never know, really. I never really ask. When you ask those questions, mate, why are you working me so hard? It's not one that goes down too well. So I used to just get my head down, get on with it. And I was told as well growing up that like I should never really be seen in the physio room because that means that there's something wrong with me. stupid advice, but I took it. So I'd literally be there, like, grinning and bearing and fucking, not agony as such, but like, just in pain where I didn't know I could get pain. Back's paying for it now. And yeah, like Jack said, it's tough because I wasn't starting for Leicester at the time. Marcos, if he was fit, he was starting. What a player he was. And then eventually Marcos got injured as well. So then I had to do the same process and then play on the weekend too. And looking back on it, when you're older and more senior, I think the game's changed a bit now. Like, even being a youngster, you can almost be a senior player. Like, I assume Jack's one of the senior players at Wasps. You can sort of voice your opinion a bit more, but you have to go through that hardship first and sort of earn your stripes to earn your stripes to sort of be able to have that conversation, because you haven't you got to prove yourself, you got to prove your worth, because otherwise you could just fucking fall off face of the earth and still walk around trying to call all the shots. But
I think the other thing with that as well is, like, you want to, as you say, earn your stripes, you want to prove yourself to the boys as much as the coaches. Like, you don't want to be that one that's not training on a Monday because they're still sore from a game. Like, you want to be the one out there. And I still would want to be that guy that's always out there training, whether I'm 21 or 31. I hope I'm still going at 31. I'll be impressed if the legs are still going.
Flexible enough.
Well, I was going to say, with that flexible frame, you're going to be fine. Yeah. It's a really interesting point, though, about it's no longer about time in the saddle that gets you seniority. It's more about ability. And Jack, I mean, have you got responsibility at Wasps? I'd be amazed if you didn't. But do you feel quite in there with the leadership function?
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky in the sense that I've been sort of, I think it comes with game time and playing more and more. And then you realise that if you're part of that group that's playing regularly, that you'll be involved in certain discussions on a regular basis. So, like, this year I've been invited into a bit more senior stuff, which I've really enjoyed. And, like, we've got some good senior players in the group that it's good for me to learn off. Someone like, well, obviously Launchers is your obvious great leader, great captain for us, but someone who probably you wouldn't think of as much necessarily, someone like Jimmy Gopeth, like, for me, someone who's playing at 36, 37, the age he is now, the experience he's got and the years and years he played in different countries as well, like, hearing him talk about different things in different ways, like, I'm always all ears and hearing it from behind the scenes in some of those leadership conversations. You hear things that you wouldn't normally hear that goes up to the wider group, and it's nice for me to try and sort of listen in on that stuff and take it in, because although I am sort of involved in that setup, I'm still learning a lot. And I think we all are. Like Genji would say the same, like, he's captained Leicester now a few times, but doesn't mean he knows everything leadership wise. That, like, you're always learning in that sense. So yeah, it's a learning process as much as it is trying to input at the time, because me and Genji are probably quite similar in the sense that from a club environment anyway, like, I'm not afraid to voice my opinion. So I think sometimes hearing, inputting as much as you can, but also knowing when the right time to input is a skill really that you try and sort of learn.
A genuine question with a real sort of interest attached to it, because it's something that certainly has Tiz and I have spoken about quite a bit in the past. Both of you actually, because you've both got interests outside of your jockstrap, so to speak. Jack, how much do you think you are a better leader and sort of more comfortable in that environment because of everything else that you do on the side and your other business interests? Do you just quickly want to, because we discussed this on the RPA show, do you want to quickly remind everybody what you do in your downtime?
Rockport. Is it Rockport?
What are you talking about? Rockcat.
What's it called? Rockcat, that's the one.
Rockcat. We can't believe you're dropping.
Give a brief synopsis of what it. Rockport. I was going to say, bloody Nora. But tell us about your business interest and how instrumental that is, and how comfortable you feel in that leadership environment.
So I think I've always had an interest in property, and that's why. Well, Alex Lumbo, the guy that I set it up with, used to play for Wasps. We've been top mates since then. Really, he retired from concussion, and we sort of had a few chats really and just got talking about, we both shared a passion for property and always wanted to have that focus. I was obviously out for nearly about a season and a half with my injuries. So it really got me thinking that I needed something else outside of rugby. And then we set up Rockcat together and effectively just sort of helping find opportunities for investors, developers, some bigger funds as well, and talking with landowners to try and sort of place deals with people. So agency work effectively, and then brokering debt as well, which Alex is sort of the brains behind that side of things. But for me, yeah, you learn to sort of hold yourself in a different way in different meetings, different environments. And it's not only that, it's sort of having that other interest outside of rugby and knowing that rugby's not, if it did happen to end tomorrow, that's not the end of your life. And as Genji said, there's different things that give you a bit more perspective. Could be having a little one like Genji has, or it could be an injury like I had that makes you think rugby could have been the end after those sort of 18 months I spent out. But you learn to appreciate everything else you've got and give yourself other focuses. And now at the end of a training day or whatever, I'll be on Zooms, doing Zooms, talking to people, having phone calls, emails. Like it's just nice to have a different distraction, have something else going on, because you can have a bad day at the club and really let it get on top of you for the rest of the day. Or you just take that hat off in the car and crack on with something else. And that's how I try and see it.
Yeah, genuine question though, boy. I think I spoke to you about a little bit in camp anyway. But when, because you had a mental injury, like crazy, what was going on with you? And I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. But the way you dealt with it, in my eyes, was unreal. Do you think, and you don't have to lie about it, bullshitter, do you think that having this rock cap was the saving grace to why you came back? I don't doubt you would have came back and tore up anyway, but do you think it was a saving grace and a driver for you to then get back fit, thinking, fuck me, if I don't, then I'm doing this and pushing pencils for the next 8 years where I could be ripping it up in the Premiership, playing for England?
I wasn't actually lucky enough to be doing that. Alex and I hadn't actually set up the Rock Cup stuff when I did my injury and during my injury, but the conversations had probably started a little bit during that, because I was panicking. Like there was points in my injury where I was like, fuck, is this it now? Like I remember, honestly, I'll send you the picture at some point when I woke up. So I had it was 2 days after the Saris game where I had my ankle operated on, my left ankle. And then about 8 days after that, I had my right knee operated on to fix ACL, LCL, hamstring, popliteus, like the lot. It was all popped off the bone.
No wonder you're so bendy. Have they put sort of like elastic bands in there instead of ligaments?
It's just rubber bands, yeah, that's it.
Double hinges.
But, yeah, I remember waking up from, I actually think, because my missus is in the room, apparently I've like proposed to her and I'm crying as I'm coming around from the anaesthetic after my knee op. I'm like,
does that count? Just for clarification, are you hooked in, or is that?
I think she's ruled that one out. And then I've like woken up, then about an hour later, they were changing the dressing. And honestly, I've never seen anything like it. Like it was, they put it back together with staples rather than stitches. And I didn't even know that was a thing. I've got like, I have this scar all down the outside of my leg and then down the middle over the patella. I was just looking at that. And then for the next 8 weeks, I was in the wheelchair because I couldn't weight bear on either. And I was just like, how am I going to get back playing rugby? Like ever? How is that going to happen? I just couldn't see that part. So I think there was times in the rehab as well. And then I needed that second op on the ankle that you're just like...
That's the one for you, bro, that I think, fuck me, the resilience that you've shown there, because I don't know how I would react, but I know that my head would have been absolutely gone. If someone had told me, you know, I thought your ankle done as well, I personally don't think I would have been able to... Fuck, I can't say it, but I don't know if I would have been able to react the way you did. I would have done something mental, like deleted my League of Legends account. I don't know.
Well, that rash.
No, so I think... When I did come, so I came back, obviously had the ankle op, had the knee op, took about 9 months to get back, and then my ankle wasn't right. I was running around, played like 20 minutes against Sale, I think it was, played Leicester actually, and Youngie didn't do me any favours. He went down with a hit pointer 1 minute into the game. I was like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Boom, straight
so
in.
I've gone on, yeah, straight in. And then the next week playing Newcastle, and I just couldn't run after about half an hour. I was like, this is...
4G.
Like, I couldn't... No, I was at the Rico, just, I was like, I can't run on this, so... Came off, we had a scan and the fracture had reopened basically. Had to go through an op again, another 6 months. And then, Genji sort of touched on it when you're in camp, like the hard thing is obviously you're not around your family and stuff. And I'm a big family man. My girlfriend was great during my injury and stuff. I couldn't have got through it without all them. And I know it sounds a bit cringe saying it, but like every day, like my brother was living with me at the time, and the amount of hobnobs and cups of tea we got through on the days where I was down in the dumps, just like... So what you need though sometimes in it, you just like you come in and you're like, my knee's the size of a melon. I'm like, how am I gonna get back running? And yeah, you just need a little pick me up. It's I was quite lucky with all the support I've got.
Do you feel now, Jack, almost like this is a sort of second chance kind of thing, and therefore some of the pressure has gone. I suppose there's more enjoyment attached to it. Do you feel a sort of, I'm not going to say the second coming, but do you know what I mean by it's sort of a bit of a free hit in some ways.
Yeah, you just grateful to be out there and try and play with a bit more of a smile on my face. I think I took it so, like, obviously I do take it seriously now because that'd be wrong to say I don't, but I couldn't think about anything else before I did my injuries. Like, as you were saying earlier, Genji, like, when you first come into it, like, you're reading everything in the media, you're thinking about this, think about that, and then, like, you get carried away with what people say, you read into it too much, you're watching your games back, you're watching clips, you're watching highlights, you're watching everything, like, it becomes a bit of a bubble. And then to be taken away from it for so long was kind of quite refreshing to be like, have a nicer perspective going back into it. And that's how I've tried to just enjoy my rugby. And whenever I do get too bogged down and overthink it, which I have been guilty of even in the last few months, I definitely don't play as well. So I think it does help when I just like relax a little bit and just try and enjoy it.
Ellis, it's sort of a similar question to you really, but you've done your player's epoch. Who fingers in business pies at the moment, other than Hickory?
I wish I had Hickory Rubber Scaffold and millionaires. I am setting a gym up at the moment in Leicester with Sam Asplan Robinson. The company got set up 2 days ago, I think, and I'm actually just trying to pull some funds out of other investments now to fund that, basically, because I'm not sure.
Big money.
Yeah, shock. I'm not sure we want to go down the route of... I'm not 100% yet. I'd be talking shit if I told you I knew all the intricacies of the business plan. But because it's our own money, we don't really need a business plan, if that makes sense. That we don't need to present it to anyone and say, fucking, we're going to do this on this day. And we're sort of playing it by ear at the moment. We've looked at the location that we want. We found like a sick location. And now we're sort of trying to sum together a business plan and stuff. We've done all the numbers for the equipment we need. Yeah, it's exciting. But
what's the USP? Is it for mums?
If I told you that, you'd go and set a fucking gym up, wouldn't you, Alex?
Well, so, not in the middle of a COVID pandemic, I wouldn't, but I like where you're going with it. Yeah, there you are, you see, ahead of the game. I just wonder whether you're going after mums who like frothy coffee and their, you know, their sweaty Betty gear, or whether you're going for the heavy tin lifters.
No, it's not going to be a sweathead gym, which I think there's a few of them everywhere, isn't there? Like, you can always sort of find one of them, and people that travel long and far and pay ridiculous dough to go to them, I think. But I'd say there's a few of them in Leicester at the moment. It's probably more so university.
Bit more niche, isn't it?
Bit more niche, mate. Well. Yeah, it is. And I don't know anyone of that caliber up here. There's one in Bristol actually called Trojan Fitness, which is like a bit of a sweathead gym. But it's class, unreal. It's headed up by a bloke called Matty Hud, who played for Dings Crusaders and that too. If you've ever been down there, you won't forget it, Jack. But yeah, he does really well off it. So I think it's something that me and Sam are quite interested in and sort of franchising this idea. But other than that, no, I haven't got anything.
But do you like having something to come home to from training that isn't rehab, carbo loading, protein shakes, etc.? You like a bit of a spreadsheet and a business plan.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, and Jack sort of mentioned it then, the thing that I've learned in my little experience I've got over the years is that, firstly, people who are interested in rugby want rugby players to be in business with them for whatever reason. Secondly, the skills you sort of learn, like Jack said about those leadership groups and the meetings that you have and you learn with other people, the skills that you learn when you're in those meetings are so transferable to the real world as such that it's crazy. So I'll go on a meeting or a call with someone and someone will say something, I don't agree with it. And if I were to pipe up and say, hang on a minute, I don't think we should do it like that, why don't we do this? Everyone's like, fucking hell, can't believe you. Do you know what I mean? And that doesn't really happen in the office world. You've got your boss, whatever they say is the last thing. Whereas, like, I can imagine it wasps if Launch has said something and Jack didn't agree with it, he'd be like, Launch, I don't know, why don't we? And Launch would listen to him. Crazy, yeah. Right? But these people, like, in the office world, they just have no idea that this is how, not necessarily a better dynamic, but this is another way you can do things, whereas people actually have a point of view. And if you listen to all of them, you might find a better idea, as opposed to, right, this is what we're doing and we're sticking with it the whole way. If it crash and burns, fuck it, we're all going down. We're all sinking.
That's the thing. If there was HR in the rugby world, you'd be a different kettle of fish. Yeah. You have to probably learn to, like, not hold your tongue, but when you can and can't speak, moving into the business world, it'd be slightly different. Like, that's why I think for me and Alex, it's good that we've set up something like on our own. We're not answering to anyone at the moment.
Because
I do feel like if I was going into a situation where I was working for a company at the moment, you there may be a situation where you get caught saying something you shouldn't, or equally you can't have that same freedom. Whereas Alex, if I said to Alex, mate, like for example, when I went into England camp, I didn't do a day's work on Rock Cap yeah. stuff because I wanted to focus on my first camp. But then you look back on it now and I'm like, well, actually, I watched quite a bit of Walking Dead when I was on the room. I could have done a few emails. Like, you learn. But for me, it was my first time going into it. I wanted to make sure I was doing everything right. But if I was working for someone, you wouldn't have that freedom. So it's nice that you can do it in the right way.
Leonard would have totally understood that, though. And like, if you were working with someone else, for example, Alex, you... I'm joking. Someone in like another... Exactly. Someone in a different office environment, they'd probably be like, wow, why aren't Jack pulling his weight? And they would understand the sort of pressures and the constraints that you've got, because you can't always be in your room at camp doing work. Like, there are a few people that do, and fair play, they'll be millionaires, Rodney, at the end of it. But firstly, they don't have the crack. They don't see me dishing people up on a snooker table. They don't have Genji making mental coffees for them, frothy coffees. And they don't get asked for some FIFA, do they, Jack? So
don't talk about that.
Yeah, they're missing out in a big way. But you've got to get the balance, I feel, the social balance and the work balance has to be in tune. Otherwise, like Jack said, your head just fall off.
So the interesting thing, and I can't tell you as an oldie who's watched a lot of rugby and spoken to a lot of players, it's so reassuring to hear that the life after rugby is more present. It's something that players now are doing more about than perhaps they were doing 10 years ago. I just wondered whether, for both of you, it's something that you feel very comfortable doing, or whether it's something that you kind of have to put your arm around your exercise book because coaches might think that you're not necessarily as dedicated as you should be. There are some players that can get away with doing a lot of extracurricular stuff, and some like Hask who get left out of 15 England squads because he's constantly schmoozing and schmoozing.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, Jack, so obviously you and London set that up on your own, but do you have someone who sort of supervises or directs you, or you've just gone and completely Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, pretty much, mate. And obviously, it's a steep learning curve, but sometimes going in at the deep end is the best way to do it, because if you sort of work your way in slowly and always looking for advice at every corner, then you're never really going to get anywhere quickly. But equally, there's plenty of people that we know now and relationships we built that we can be like, pick up the phone and be like, oh, mate, what's your thoughts on this? And get advice. So it's quite a nice balance.
How did you start with that? Did you just cold call or just ring a company and say, listen, I'm Jack Willis, this is Alex Lundberg, we want to do this with you?
So, I'd like to think it was slightly more smooth. Smooth than that, yeah.
Embossed business cards, right from the... not out of a travel service station.
Yeah, like using sort of social media and LinkedIn was a big thing as well. Like, it still is a big thing for sort of networking with people, and I try and start it off more casual, really, because I want to build a relationship with people, and that's what Alex and I would be about, is like building proper relationships with people, not just calling them out of the blue and going off that way, because I don't feel like any good business is done that way, really. You want to build relationships, and that's the thing I've found hardest during the last we've been doing it a year or so now. And the hardest thing is we've not been able to really go out and properly meet people and get to know people face to face. A lot of it has been on Zoom calls. And I mean, it's a pretty good replacement, isn't it? Like you can get quite a bit done, but it's not the same as meeting in person.
No, and I feel, especially with a bloke like yourself, like you've got an energy about you when you actually speak to you in the flesh. Not to be too nice to you, but you've got like a good energy, good vibe. And if you are doing business, obviously off the first handshake you give or that aura that you give off, it goes a long way. So yeah, I'm with you there. That's why I'm not a millionaire in this gym industry, because I've been on Zoom for last year. So.
quick question. You mentioned there are a few players out there who get really into this. Who is going to be the first player that we know of to be moving to Monaco out of your crew? Who's in the private jet club first? You can see yourselves. Is there anyone else out there
moving
who's doing...
back to Noel West, mate? I'm not going anywhere else besides there. Right.
Mate, listen to it. You've got... He's talking as if he's on his big farm estate. He's like, yeah, I'll move back there. Of course you will.
I fucking will, boy. With a load of dough, I'll be there.
Are you going to take the annex with you?
Yeah, the book's there. I reckon probably Itoja's probably the first bloke to go there. But you're probably busy in Parliament doing another Brexit deal or something. He's one of those who do a lot of extracurricular work when we're at camp. We don't really see too much of the big man. He does come I don't know what the word is. You sort of see him bobbing through, and then like he don't play a game. Paul won't jump on FIFA or anything, but he's there. You know, you sort of you see. Oh, Maz was down here a minute ago. And now he's up doing fucking his 10 law degrees or something like that. there's a few undercover workers. Charlie Yules, but I don't think he'd ever go to Monaco. The bloke's owned the same T-shirt for the last 7 years. Literally seen him in every single picture I've ever had with Yules. He's got the same top on. It's this Hard Rock Cafe.
Economising. He's obviously reinvesting all funds into...
He's a minimalist, mate. Cash. He's an absolute creep. He's got two pairs of boxers. You know that? And he alternates each day. They're vile. They're like card, mate. That's how hard they are. Tiny piece of them, so it doesn't bother him. Yeah, probably Yulesy. He'll have a load of dough, but he's so tight as well. Got the longest arms in the world and the deepest pockets as well. Crazy. Unders has a bit of extras as well, I think. Bit of uni work. Business. He likes property development.
I'll tell you one from WAS as well. Will Rowlands, very, very clever bloke. He went to Oxford and he's a switched on fella. I don't know whatever he's one of them blokes that I don't know what he'll go into, but whatever he does, he'll be good at that. You know what? One of those blokes, he'll always be good at it.
Talented. Yeah. Good. Send us through the investment decks and we'll spread them out across the good, the bad, and the rugby.
Please do.
The services. Let's talk a bit of rugby, Jack, because last time we spoke to you, the big day hadn't happened yet. So how was your debut? What was the song on the bus? That's the most important question.
What did I sing? Actually, I do remember what I sang. It wasn't on the bus because the way things were, obviously the buses were split. So it was waited till we got back to the hotel because it's all like socially distanced and stuff. So I sang American Boy by Estelle.
How does that go?
I can't. I love that song, mate.
Were you more nervous for the song or the start?
You were class with that.
I like a sing song, a dance. Yeah. I had that in the locker, or My Humps by Black Eyed Peas, but I thought that'd be a bit much, so I thought I'd keep that tucked away.
So talk us through the day, and I mean, do you do nerves on a big day like that? Are you pretty calm and comfortable? Where are you at?
It was weird actually, because I think it helps nerve wise that there actually wasn't 80,000 fans there, because I think that makes a big difference. And I don't know if you found it as well, Genji, but since we've been back without fans, I kind of felt a little bit more relaxed, like heading to games and without my family there. It's sort of a running joke that I normally have about 20 tickets going to my family. I'm sorting them out with the office lady. I've always got loads of people that are cheering me on. So that always is like another thing in your head. You want to do well in front of them. But yeah, I was obviously very nervous, but I felt like I'd exerted a lot of emotion throughout the week after I'd found out on the Thursday. I sort of was quite emotional about it, absolutely chuffed and ecstatic. But from then on, the sessions are so tough in camp, and the like the big main training day as well. It makes you feel so prepared going into the game that I just felt, look, you've got to stay relaxed. You've done all the work now. Just try and enjoy it, because that doesn't come around again. Your first cap for your country is a once in a lifetime experience. And yeah, it was incredible. I think I was kind of gutted, because after about 15 minutes, I took a dead leg by one of the big Georgian heads, and that I could feel it getting worse and worse. I was trying to rub it to get it sorted, but I could feel my leg getting worse and worse as the game went on, and I ended up coming off sort of 50 minutes. But it's one of those that you wanted the game to go on forever, just loving it. And Genji was a big part of that as well. I think for him, he obviously was trying to just make it even more special for me, revving me up. And when I scored, I remember him coming up to me and fucking shaking my head. There's a few pictures around like this. And he's like, fucking hell. He's like, fucking hell, boy. He's like, you're on for a fucking man of the match here. Let's fucking have it. He's like, he's getting at me. But it's just it's a class experience. And to have top boys around you as well, it makes it even better. It was, incredible feeling.
Are you one of those players, Ellis, that commentates on the game during the game?
Yeah, I don't mean to. I think it just happens naturally, to be honest. I have conversations, obviously, when I'm on the pitch with Jamie. Some of the stuff we say to each other, you wouldn't believe, honestly. But it's not us taking the piss in any way, shape or form. It must just be a sense of nerves, or I don't know what it is, but we say some fucking mental shit when we're on the pitch together. For Jack, to be honest, because I knew about all his family usually come to the games, and obviously stadiums being empty and stuff, I just wanted to make it as special as I could. So when he scored that try, obviously I probably lost my mind more than his family did. And then he scored again against Wales, was it?
No, I got a turnover that you went mental at.
A turnover, that was it. It was like a try, wasn't it? But I just thought, like, he's worked so hard. Honestly, I know it's a bit soppy, but you worked so hard for whatever, like 14, 15 months. Come back. I told you already, come back from that injury. And like I said, I don't think I'd have been able to do that. And for you to get that far and achieve so much in those games that you have, I was just so happy for you. And it's weird when you're in camp, you build those relationships so much quicker. Like, people might be looking from the outside thinking, fucking hell, like, he hardly knows him, but I spent every single waking hour with the bloke for the last 3 weeks, you know, doing the most grueling training sessions. They're sweating all over each other. So you know each other quite well.
It's like Love Island, isn't it? A few days together, they're all of a sudden declaring love. That's what it is. They're 24/7.
We don't get 50 grand at the end of it.
Yeah.
I love that. That's our social clip done and dusted. Two England rugby players discussing their comparisons with Lovren. What is the bond between you two? Where does this story start?
I don't know. He absolutely spanked me when I was captain for Leicester that time. We took our heaviest ever defeat. And from then on, I thought, you know what, I'm going to be real good mates with this bloke.
Is that it? So it's not age group?
I never did any age group stuff with Jack. I remember, so you got injured semi-final. What year was it? 2018. 2018, he got injured in the semi-final. 4G, Sarri's away, getting the turnover, got hit out of the ruck, bang, worst injury of his life, and the last. And I remember I was in camp at the time, obviously, and the look on some of the boys' faces who knew you was just so, they were so devastated, and they were just describing you in a way that I thought, fuck me, I'd probably get on quite well with that bloke. And then again, you weren't fit for the World Cup, but either were you? Or there was something going on with your ankle.
No, that's when I just had the second surgery on my ankle.
I think it was Launchers or someone speaking to me about that again. And then 2020 came around and I seen you fucking man of the match every single week. And I thought, this boy has got a proper buzz about him, good energy. And then like Edgerton and a few of those boys that used to speak about you, and they've got some good stories of you, as you can imagine. And he's decent on the piss as well. So then when we got into camp and we had a few beers together, we got on like ice on fire. But yeah, there's no like age grade love story there. Same with Sinks though. Like, I never knew Sinks before I went into camp, and I got on well with him a lot of the time. We do clash now and then, but we do get on well.
It is weird. Everyone kind of knows everyone by the time you played like a couple of years in the Prem. Like, you get to know everyone at the end of a game, whether it's a quick handshake, and you know people through people, and you kind of, you build that mutual respect as well. Like, when you play against each other, like, if you rate someone, you have a bit of that sort of level of respect already. And then quite quickly spend a few days together, and the environment of being in camp so intense that your relationships, and I think that's what helps like mold international teams together, is that intensity and how much time you spend with each other is why it works.
Why do you and Sinks clash?
Jack just said something really nice, and I saw you picked out of that.
Really lovely, Jack. We'll frame that and clip it up. Why do you think Sinks clash?
I think we're very similar in, you know, you're so similar to someone that you argue sometimes. So then when we're on the training pitch, Jack will be able to back me up. He's a very intense trainer, and he's one of those that speaks a lot when he's on the pitch, and sometimes he says some stuff that I don't agree with, so I'll give him a little shove on the back. He just loses his mind sometimes. I had noticed.
Yeah. That is very interesting, actually, because there are so many photos of you. Normally, whenever photos come out off training, you and Sinks are cuddling, or there's a little over the shoulder cuddle, or there's a sort of, you know, not quite holding
making up.
There's a lot of love there as well.
Yeah. I've known him now 5 years, so we've been in. Besides when he went away to Lions, we've been in like every single one of the tours together, roomed with each other twice. I don't think he likes room with me because I'm quite messy and all I do is game. And he goes to bed quite early, and he's not tidy by any means at all. If it's his, actually, it's really tidy. But if it's yours, he won't keep it tidy. That's his thing. Like, he'll leave your toilet in a right 2 and 8. But if it's his, no, it's fine. We've grown to love each other over the years.
These are the insights the people come for. Exactly what the world needs to know. Talk us through. I mean, let's talk a little bit of Six Nations. You know, are you in? Obviously, you will be in camp when this goes out. Are you in tomorrow? Is that right?
Wednesday, I think.
Wednesday. And is that a bit like the first day of school? Is it bags of stash and lots of meetings, or is it just sidle in and crack on with it?
I think we're using the same kit as what we had for the autumn's cut, I want to say. So
economy, obviously. Yeah. Budget cuts.
The only time I've ever been given like fresh kit bags every time you go in was 2016-17, and that was because there was a transition in colour scheme or something. But no, I think we're using the same Umbro kit. There was a vicious rumour going around that we're going to get shell jackets. The proper old school Umbro football.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Love so it. We'll see if the kit man's pulled through. If he hasn't, there'd be hell to pay.
Is it quite fun getting back into camp? Is it quite a lot of noise and chit chat, or is it you just got meetings?
Yeah,
to get
when
on
you
with
first come in, it's quite like, well, when there wasn't the COVID stuff, it was like a proper social hit. Excuse me, the second you get in, like, boys are just loving seeing each other again, especially like with the Saris lads who obviously we haven't been playing against for a long time. It'd be nice to see some of those boys. But with the new COVID stuff, we honestly, I've heard rumours that it's going to be coffees on different tables, etc. So we'll see.
I don't want to tee this up for you both to offer a complaint, because I know that's not what it's about. But Jack, COVID, question mark. I mean, how has that shredded what is the dream job for so many people who will be listening to this? I mean, is the reality fairly far removed from that at the moment?
What, in terms of in camp?
Just training. Are you having the nasal thing every other day and isolated
we're now,
when you train and that
now,
kind of rubbish?
Yeah, we're now on like two tests a week. I have that mine done this morning. I've got another lot done on Wednesday. And then, yeah, like before we get our results, we train in masks. So like today we were training, I mean, we didn't actually train on the pitch today because it was so snowy. So we went to the Rico and did like an indoor thing, but we have to wear masks all the time now, indoors, meetings. Like, meetings are outdoors. It's gone sort of up another level. It's better that than rugby getting called off, isn't it, really? So like, if I was saying this the other day as well, because all the snow came down like a year ago before the COVID stuff. If someone had said to you, like, oh, we're not training today, like, snow, like, something's happened, like, everyone's a bit like all the staff, everyone's like, okay, we've got to organise this, we've got to organise that. Whereas now, like, everyone's so used to just being like, oh, the game could be off this weekend, training's off today, isolating for 10 days. Because of all the random things that have happened the last few months, like, nothing seems out the picture. So you're kind of a bit more used to it now.
Do you feel that the way it is now will be the norm going forward? Or do you think there's going to be like that transition period where we then go back to how we were before?
I reckon the rest of this season will be similar to how it is. And then hopefully by the end of the season, we've got some fans back. And then I reckon all of us will be vaccinated by then. I don't know. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because obviously the priority at the moment is getting people who are vulnerable vaccinated. But if we're playing a sport where we're more at risk, then you'd think that they'd, like, if they're allowing it to go ahead, they might as well vaccinate us, so then they don't have to worry about us. Because at the moment, we're a bit of a headache for the government in a way at the moment because of the risks that we pose by catching it. But if they vaccinate all of us, then we wouldn't be a worry. I don't know. Would make sense or not.
Yeah,
really.
I've tried to switch off from it all. I couldn't tell you the ins and outs of it.
It's only a global pandemic. Park it and move on. Quite right, too. So a quick bit, Ellis, just on, I suppose, Scotland first up. Obviously, a glorious day for you 12 months ago, as we touched on as well. I mean, Six Nations is Six Nations, and wherever you look, there's some pretty juicy rivalries, etc. But Scotland, question mark?
Yeah, I've looked at their squad. They've got decent outfit this year. Canberra Path in their squad now.
Yeah.
One of the Prem's finest. Now they've got a real good team, haven't they? They sort of get stronger each year, whereas they used to sort of, without taking anything away from them, because they always play well against us. They used to be a team that sort of never really competed for the top spot, but they're definitely up there now. Got some of the best players in the world, Finn Russell, in great form. So they're a danger, definitely, but I've yet to feel unprepared in an England team. So hopefully we get back in, keep the momentum that we had at the last Six Nations or Autumn's Cup, and we do a job.
Ellis said last time he was on, I think, that he doesn't watch much of the game but does get excited when it's scrum time and will maybe doodle a note or two. I just wondered, have you got a notebook and do you jot bits down as you go, or do you kind of channel hop, second screen, whatever it is the kids of today are doing?
Yeah, I'd probably be switching off when it's scrum time completely. Whereas when it's like when we're looking at breakdown and things like that, I'll be that's what.
Oh, look how flexible his hammies are.
What lovely angle.
It sounds so much cooler. You talking about profile and literally whenever the scrum talk's going on, I'm like, just fucking push, lads. Just fucking push.
Of course, don't worry about my neck.
From the Haas School of Scrummaging. I tell you what's quite interesting, and I don't know whether you can give away trade secrets or not. I heard Jurgen Klopp say something the other day about how when they do analysis on the opposition, they always try and find the weak link. They identify the guy who they think they go after. Is that a similar... Do you ever do that in a week, in a game plan? Do you pick out someone and say, right, everything goes through here?
Yeah, it depends.
I think sometimes you do it the opposite way. Like you pick out the strengths, really, wouldn't you? You'd be like, right, we've got to try and utilize X, Y, and Z because, I suppose I don't really know football tactics, so it might be different. Although I'm a big fan of Liverpool, so you know, if there's any tickets going, Alex, sort me out, mate. Jurgen Klopp on there.
what I will say though is that I think you've just rifled through the media handbook there, and you've taken a question about negativity and you've switched it into a positive, which is a very clever tactic.
Well,
I'm going to go again, Ellis. Does Eddie ever say, right, this bloke here is out of his depth?
Yeah.
Go get him.
Yeah, of course. Everyone does, but I think we have this. I think he might say it so that sometimes he might be like, fucking hell, this bloke's the best scrummager in the world. He's going to eat you alive, X, Y, and Z, just to like make you fucking switch on and be wary of it. And it's also for courses because like Jack might not need that, and I might need sort of a rocket up my ass to remind me how hard a battle it's going to be. And it's tough, isn't it? Because like our scrums, fuck, I don't want to jinx us, gone quite well recently for England. So week to week, I've never had the conversation that in one of those meetings, we've never had the conversation of where we say, right, these lot of shit, it's going to be a walk in the park. It's always, how can we use what we've got to get us into the game? It's never a case of these lot of fucking trash, let's just forget about them. We actually do analysis on everyone, and we literally, like for the France game, for example, where we didn't know who was going to be playing, we did analysis on every fucking title all the way down to Proto 2, I think. So it does get quite extensive sometimes, and like the great thing and shit thing about scrums that Jack won't appreciate at all, because he just smells my ass when we're doing it, is that every prop scrums differently. So whether it might be he's going to attack your bind this week, he's going to go in at the angle, he's long-legged, he cheats, he pushes before the ball's in. There's so many different sort of dynamics that you have to think about that you almost cannot overanalyze someone. So for me, I actually enjoy that process of looking. But I don't like sitting there on a keyboard and spacebar. Right, yeah. Clip 14, please. Yeah, I don't like doing that sort of shit. I'd rather watch their games, you know, and like see how they react after the scrum, what they're doing, and sort of go into like the psychological side of things and how they react after a scrum. Do they actually enjoy scrummaging? Do they want a scrum and all that sort of stuff? Because I find I probably get most purchase out of that.
What I love about that is the mind game. So actually, it wasn't a very good question, so I sort of apologise. You've answered it very well, but the mind is not a rarity. But I'm fascinated in that mind games thing and where you, Ellis, will get prodded and poked to bring out the best in you. Jack, I can't see that working for you. Do you have coaches who lay down challenges in that way, or do you always have to sort of quite a straight dialogue with the people who are trying to get the best out of you?
It depends on week to week as well, because sometimes it's a hard one. Like coaches do it in different ways at different times. And I think, like you say, you can sometimes they know, right, just leave him to it this week. He can crack on and manage himself. Other weeks, you might not have gone the best the week before. They want to give you a bit of a rod up your ass. But then there's other guys that would, if they haven't gone well the week before, they'll want an arm around them. So as a coach, I'd imagine that's quite a hard skill to sort of realise. I'm not really sure what sort of player I am. I don't know what I prefer, whether I prefer an arm around me or a bit of a kick up the ass now and then. I don't know. It's a hard one. I guess if I feel like I deserve it, then I wouldn't mind. But most of the time, everyone wants an arm around them now and then, don't they? Don't know.
Just going to clip that up, saying, if I need it, a rod up the arse does me a wonder.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a show, this. But are you, Ellis, are you someone that plays at your best when you're angry?
I don't know. I think, to be honest with you, and I know it sounds a bit weird, is that I'm always quite angry on like the low, down, low. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to...
That's a secret.
I don't need someone fucking screaming in my ear for me to get wound up. It happens quite easily, so... the best thing for me is, like, if we're playing a game, I try, as stupid as this sounds, to, like, get hit really early. Because, like, the worst feeling in the world is when you get, like, a knee in the face or, like, an elbow in the face, anything that's on the nose area where your eyes start going. And I think it just proper makes me boil. And that sort of gets me going into the game. So I try sort of stick my neck out for the first 5 minutes, and that gets the gearbox ticking.
It's quite fucking weird.
No, I need to
it's
check.
A very weird thing I need you to do for a living, if we're going to be honest. Okay, quick fire through the runners and riders in terms of the Six Nations. France, question mark, the one to watch.
Yeah.
What did you learn about them in the Autumn Nations Cup?
They've got a lot of depth. I didn't know that from... I thought, fucking hell, that first 23 they've got out on the paddock is amazing. And then you look at the team that they put out when they don't have all their regulars available. Mm. And they still competed very well. So they've got a lot of depth, the French. So yeah, they're ones to look out for, definitely.
Jack, you played against Wales, obviously, in the Autumn Nations, fifth in the Six Nations last year. Quite an exciting little, quite an exciting squad that Wayne Pivac's gone with. Did they underperform? Are they ready to get back to where most people would expect them to be? Or do you still see vulnerability in Wales?
They've gone through quite a big transition, haven't they, over the last sort of couple of years since Gatland left as well. Like a lot of older players that have moved on and a lot of new younger players coming in. So I guess it's that transition period that a lot of teams do go through. But you'd imagine they've got quite a lot of talent coming through year after year, so it won't be long before they're right up the top again.
Mm. Ding. Very good. Italy. Are Italy ever going to fire any shots? They're getting better.
Joe Pellegrini's injured as well now, isn't he? And he's one of their best players.
Matteo Menozzi's not playing.
That's
you spoke to him about that?
Yeah, I think I'd imagine it's a similar sort of situation to Marla. Not that he's got... I don't think he's got any kids or anything, but it is tough going away from... He sort of made England his home now with his missus, and when he used to go back to Italy, I'd imagine he'd go back to Italy and be able to see all his family, and it would be brilliant, like going to camp for a few days, see his family, the rest. But now he'd be going over there locked in a bubble and really strict. It's probably not the same for him. And I think he put an Instagram post up basically saying, like, look, I'd love to play for Italy again at some point, but for me, I'm not in the headspace mentally to go and be locked in this bubble for 8 weeks. And you can't really fault him for it. You have to do what's right for you, don't you? And if it's going to mess you up mentally, it'll probably have a longer effect on him and a worse effect on his career for the next year or so if he does it that way, rather than just take it being like, look, hold his hands up, 2 months off of it and get back to it. I think he loves it at WASS, which is nice. And it's nice to know that he feels that WASS is so appealing to him that he can choose that over going and playing for his country. It just shows that hopefully we're getting some stuff right at the club at the moment. It's good.
It's a huge blow for Italy, but yeah, hopefully he's all right first and foremost. And Ireland, finally, I mean, you know, Johnny Sexton's still doing the biz, a whole load of world-class players, but probably haven't fired in the way that they'd have wanted. Do you do a lot of work on seeing who's been picked for squads, Ellis? Are you interested in that kind of thing, or do you just get to game week and then have a peek?
So I think our focus is usually what we can do, because I think Eddie speaks about it quite a lot. They don't have to name their squad until, what is it, the morning of or the night before?
Thursdays normally.
Yeah, the Thursday or something. They don't actually legally have to name their squad until like however long before. So you can, when you're doing your biggest days of the week, your Tuesday, Wednesday sessions or whatever it is for every country, you don't actually know who's going to play. You've got a rough idea. So for example, for Ireland, you probably think Johnny Sexton's going to play, Mahoney.
Ty Furlong's back.
He's played
for a long time.
But again, yeah, like Andrew Porter's been really good. So you don't know whether or not Furlong's going to start. So there's no point me sitting there and thinking, fucking hell, I'm playing against this bloke or that bloke, because they might even start the other lad, the blonde one. What was his name? John Ryan, was it?
Yeah.
Because they might play him. So there's no point sort of worrying too much about who they're going to pick, because if you control what you control, shit as that is to say, is as long as you control what you control, then you're going to do the best that you can do, because there's so many different variables in rugby, like the fucking weather, what ball you're playing with, what pitch you're playing on, what fucking studs you're wearing that week. Like, so many different things can go wrong at different times. I don't think you can account to win a game just on who they pick. So that's why I don't feel it's that important to just think, fuck, we're going to pick this squad because they might play this guy. It's just train as well as you can for the week, and we'll take on whatever we can on the weekend.
ding. Leave the hype to the others. Complete the sentence. In the 2021 Guinness Six Nations, England will...
win.
Good. Jack?
Win. That's why I was going to say that, but I didn't know if it was for me or not, so I just...
Yeah, right, perfect. You both answered it very nicely indeed. One quick question, actually, Ellis, regarding... So Eddie's in his isolation independent station at the moment. I just wonder whether you're going to be given, like sort of headsets where he can literally sit in your eyeballs 24/7 telling you what he wants to do. Are you all having to Zoom him during training?
We had it with Steve at the club actually before one of the games, and we were joking saying that they were going to basically glue an iPad to one of the drones and he's going to be flying around the pitch like a beauty. You're fucking height down, get a lot of views and everyone at training. So there were a few jokes about that. Who knows? I wouldn't put it past Eddie to be flying around on the drone during training. But I think he might be all right for the Thursday training. So I guess that's when it'll kick off.
I want a 40-foot screen at one end of Penny Hill. You're at the Lensbury, aren't you? Just like some sort of evil overlord.
Yeah.
Iron Sauron.
Don't put it past him. I can imagine Proudfoot running around with the iPad. Very steady pace.
And you're trotting around behind it now. Guys, it's been really good fun. Thank you very much indeed. Jack, we hope in Shadowlands that you're not in the shadows for too long. I know the strength and depth at the moment is ridiculous, but you know there'll be a lot of people who hope you get a good run. Hopefully not other people's misfortune. But keep trucking in the meantime. Look after yourself. Ellis, go do the beers. Are you going to enjoy it or are you going to do it?
I will enjoy it.
Good on you. Send our very best to everyone in camp when you get there. We'll be watching with great interest. And I hope the dog walker picks up dog shit. Is part of the fee because that'll keep your missus happy, and frankly, that may well serve England well. Well done on the dark side as well. Very good, an absolute natural, and we'll look forward to chatting before too long. Look after yourself.
Brilliant.
That seems a good time to remind everyone just very quickly about our Premiership show, which will be out later in the week on YouTube with our good friends at betuk.com, who are the official Premiership Rugby Predictor app, and they are offering over 14 grand's worth, 14 grand, I hear you say, of prizes. Throughout the 2020-2021 season, the player with the most accrued points win $5,000 cash prize. The app is available exclusively on betuk.com's own app to players aged 18 and over on iOS and Android. Go looking for that wherever it is you do your apps. Download the betuk.com app, register or log into your betuk.com account, select the Premiership Rugby Predictor game from the menu, make your prediction, home win, a draw or an away win for all six of the weekend's Premiership Rugby fixtures. Submit those predictions ahead of the weekend. And fingers crossed you've picked the winners. You get points for doing just that. Good luck. Don't forget T's and C's apply. 18s and over only. BeGambleAware.org. That is it for the Good, the Bad and the Rugby this week. Thank you to Ellis. Thank you to Jack. Really nice to chew the fat. Good luck to both of you over the coming weeks, as we said. And good luck to all the other five nations in the competition. It says that on the script. I wish I could believe it wholeheartedly. Thanks again for listening. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to check out the website, goodbadrugby.com, for the Norse's stats ahead of the Six Nations. Lots to get stuck into there. It's also where you can catch our merch. And if that wasn't enough, there's our Premiership preview show on Thursday with betuk.com as well. Well done, fellas. Enjoy. Go forth and conquer. All yours, Rob Brydon. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.